From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Former President Donald Trump may have won the Iowa caucus decisively, but does that automatically guarantee him success in New Hampshire next week or even clinching the Republican nomination? History shows it's not necessarily a lock. That said, we've already seen the impact that Iowa has had on the presidential primary. Just hours after the final votes were cast, two Republican candidates dropped out, Vivek Ramaswamy and Asa Hutchinson, narrowing the field to three top candidates, Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, and Ron DeSantis. But why is the Iowa caucus so important in the presidential primary in 2024? With New Hampshire on deck, why do two small states with demographics that don't really represent the diversity of American voters have so much influence? Joining us today is Rob Stutzman. Rob is a Sacramento-based political strategist and a former deputy chief of staff for former governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Good afternoon.
Hi, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
You were actually in Iowa, so I'm sure you're basking in the warmer temperatures. How was it like, the caucus?
Well, the weather was an issue. I mean, it was cold. It was the coldest temperatures I've ever experienced. This delicate California boy was worried to getting out of there with 10 toes and 10 fingers. I made it. But weather was a factor. The other thing that was interesting was there's no Democrat caucus. The Democrats have changed the rules. So it was singularly a Republican-only caucus. And that changed the vibe a little bit. I've been there for the caucuses before. So it was Republican-only. And then who was going to win really wasn't in doubt. It was just a matter of what was Donald Trump's margin going to be. And the real prize was for second place between Haley and DeSantis, which is a bit of an insider nuance, right? So I don't know. I think this caucus unfortunately lacked a little bit of the drama and the interest that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. When it came to turnout, the turnout was low, right?
It was. It was just over 100,000. Usually they're more closer to 150. They had 185,000 in 2016, which was real competitive. There's no question the weather impacted that. We heard one story, a friend of mine, his parents are on a farm in northwest Iowa. They went to go out. They had to plow the road, third the driveway to get to the road. The fuel in the tractor was beginning to gel, so they could not caucus. So the weather had some impact on the lower turnout, but I don't think it. I don't think how low it went was due truly to weather.
Okay. I mean, what do you think the other reasons are? I mean, do you think that there is voter apathy, or maybe like the appetite isn't there as it was in 2020 or 2016?
Yeah, there's apathy. So Trump did not win Iowa in 2016. He finished second to Ted Cruz. He only added about 20,000 more votes this time in his runaway landslide victory than he had his second place in 2016. So arguably, there's a little bit of a waning movement around Trump. On the other hand, he has formed the Republican Party in general to reflect him. And so that's where a majority of Republicans the other night were. They were with Trump, even if it wasn't all that enthusiastic. And then you have Nikki Haley, who really is appealing to moderate Republicans and non-Republicans. So in Iowa, where that was a closed system of just registered Republicans, there wasn't a ton of enthusiasm for her. And the numbers that she did get truly represent just that part of the party that wants to reject Donald Trump.
Hmm. Yeah, when you were just having conversations with Iowans, obviously, like, they are known for being, really pivotal and carrying a lot of weight, especially during presidential elections. What were they telling you? What did you kind of gather from them?
That it's a foregone conclusion for Trump. They really don't like Joe Biden. I think what we're starting to see, and this is under analyzed by the mainstream media, is that Joe Biden consolidates Republicans into Donald Trump. They may not want to vote for Donald Trump, but they are never voting for Joe Biden. I think we're starting to see some of that happen. So some college educated, Republicans are starting to come back into the Trump column. Then those that were adamantly against Trump were enthusiastic about Haley, but couldn't figure out how she's going to get there. And then DeSantis, I didn't talk to anyone, meet anyone that was enthusiastic for DeSantis. Now, obviously, he finished in second place, but he also invested in the most infrastructure to truly get people out to vote.
He went to like every county in the state.
He did the full Grassley is what they call that, named after Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Visit every county. He committed everything to Iowa. I mean, they spent $120 million thus far, and their path was to win Iowa, which has been taken from them some time ago. But the mechanisms of that still got him obviously into second place. But you didn't really have any palpable sense that there was a real movement for DeSantis.
So now the focus obviously is New Hampshire. That is next week. I mean, I think about both states. They are both small. Iowa's population is 3.2 million. Like Los Angeles County is three times that. It's nearly 10 million. New Hampshire's total population is 1.4 million. That is less than the county of Sacramento. According to the census, overwhelmingly white, 89% in Iowa, 92% in New Hampshire. Do these or should these states carry as much weight as they do in 2024?
So here's the thing. I think the case against those states you've cited, they're not diverse. They really don't reflect America. And if nothing else, maybe some other states should have this opportunity at times instead of it always being Iowa and New Hampshire. The case, though, for small states is it allows candidates to go in and build support without having to spend a lot of money. So, for instance, if California was first in the nation, your barrier to entry would be substantial. Only rich candidates or candidates that have a ton of money would be able to compete here. So if you look at the history of Iowa, it really became famous in 1976 when an unknown governor from Georgia named Jimmy Carter went and planted himself in Iowa and did the work and then won the caucus and, of course, rode that to a nomination and ultimately the presidency. Similarly, Barack Obama, running against the establishment favorite in Hillary Clinton, pulls off the stunning upset that changes that race and launches him eventually to the White House by doing that in Iowa. If it had started in Illinois or California or Texas, probably Hillary Clinton wins those because she would have been able to outspend him at that point.
Oh, yeah. And then I just think about hitting every county. There's 58 in California. I mean, it's a huge state. So when it comes to Trump's big win out of Iowa, I mean, that's what, 20 delegates? And then you need like over 1,200, you know, for the GOP nomination. I mean, how much weight? I mean, you are a political strategist. I mean, you have that historical context. We also know that if you win the Iowa caucus, it doesn't really mean it is a direct, it opens the door to the presidency. I mean, how much stock do you put into the caucus today?
I put a fair amount into it. I think it reflects generally where the Republican Party is, which is consolidating around Trump. The opportunity to change the race will be Tuesday in New Hampshire. New Hampshire, the rules are a bit different. Independents may vote. There's also, once again, not a Democrat New Hampshire primary, at least not one with delegates behind it, because the Biden camp has changed the rules for their process to start in South Carolina. So does that free up independents that may be voting otherwise in Democrat primaries this time to come over and vote in the Republican primary? That's what we'll wait and see. This is Nikki Haley's chance to make Donald Trump bleed and defeat him somewhere. If she doesn't do it Tuesday, they then move on to her home state of South Carolina, which is kind of a hybrid where it's not a caucus, it's an election, but independents can vote. But it's a much more conservative state, and she's behind in the polls there. So New Hampshire could play, and as they have in the past, this big role after Iowa of putting the race onto a different trajectory if she's able to win Tuesday.
I understand the case that you made when it comes to, not having it be like California or Texas or a huge state, right? Because you would need a tremendous amount of capital behind you to do that. But what about like a purple state, like Nevada or something like that? Or I don't know, Florida.
To me, Florida is too big still, but I would... But Nevada is there's an interesting case for Nevada. I mean, Nevada, though, basically the population is in two metro areas in the north and south. But Nevada, I think, would be a great candidate. I think Arizona could be a candidate for this, which is also a purple state. You can make the case to do this in a purple state like Georgia. There's definitely other states that fit the bill. You could talk about going to South Carolina as just first in the nation, too, as the Democrats have done. I will defend the small state idea because I think there's real merit to it, and I think it equalizes the playing field. But I am for rotating this around. I think we should have some diversity in which states and which Americans get the opportunity to play this vital role. I mean, basically, DeSantis beats Haley by 2,000 votes, right? I mean, there's just 2,000 Iowans changed the whole dynamic of whether Haley was going to have any real momentum coming out of Iowa. Same if 2,000 fewer had not voted for Trump, he'd be under 50%. He'd have a different narrative. That's probably just a little too much political capital to put in the hands of the same people every 4 years.
Yeah. Speaking of reform, California is moving up to Super Tuesday. So in March, I mean, what kind of impact do you think this change for this election, what it could have?
Well, Californians get to play, Republicans get to play here, and it could be very relevant.
We're home to the largest delegates.
Absolutely. There's more Republicans in California, as blue as it is, than any other state. So there's a lot of important voices, Republican voices here that could play an important role. We had an early primary in 2008, and we're part of Super Tuesday, and John McCain won here, beat Mitt Romney, and really was a key part of propelling McCain to the nomination. So again, California could have that role. The important thing I always point out to people to remember is Super Tuesday may be March 5th, but ballots are going to be in people's homes that first week of February. And so the California primary really begins here in just a few weeks, which will be interesting because if Haley wins in New Hampshire and has some momentum, that maybe that could influence some of that early voting that takes place in California.
Given that, you know, we're home to the most Republicans, you know, despite, you know, being a blue state, you know, an Iowa Republican isn't the same as a Republican in another state. You know, we don't paint people with white brushstrokes. So how do you think candidates kind of tweak their campaigns, you know, as they go from Iowa to New Hampshire to South Carolina to Super Tuesday in a state like California?
Yeah, so look, in Iowa, it's a very evangelical state. That is still the base of the GOP. It's generally more blue collar than some other states, certainly than what California Republicans would be. So there is the opportunity to change your pitch and tone on some issues. So if you're coming to California, you probably are more likely to be talking about affordability, talking about homelessness, crime, and border security. And I think, you know, if you candidates get the opportunity to have to campaign in California, I think you'll see them talking about issues like that, which, you know, we're not quite as dominant as what they were talking about in Iowa. Mm.
Given that, you know, we're home to the most delegates, you know, why doesn't Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis, their teams, their campaigns, like really just go all in? I understand it's a big state, but it can move the needle.
Yeah, it's where it falls on the calendar. So Super Tuesday is where we are. So is Texas, and I think it's about 17 others or states total. So it becomes a big spread. It still comes back to dollars. You can travel up and down the state, and you're going to meet, you know, 100,000 people, which proportionally is nothing. But in Iowa, you meet 100,000 people, and that's how many people caucused the other night, right? And then the media market costs here are just extraordinary. It's like running a small country to have to campaign in California. It's just unfortunately very impractical.
There's also a lot of other key races, and a big change this year is former Speaker Kevin McCarthy is a former Speaker.
Right.
What impact do you think that's had on this election?
I don't think it has much on the election directly. I do think McCarthy was such a outstanding political leader and fundraiser that it may at some point limit some of the resources that Republicans will have in trying to defend their majority. I think they're going to miss him as a political leader. Having said that, I think when it comes to key races, especially here in California, I think, you know, candidates on both sides will be pretty well funded.
You know, we do have a race for a new senator. And mm-hmm. So there are three leading Democrats, Adam Schiff, Porter, as well as Barbara Lee. But there's also Garvey, who is a Republican, also a former baseball player. What kind of odds or stock do you give in potentially having a Republican be a California senator
well,
in 2024?
It's interesting. So, Steve, you have to be about my age, which, you know, it's mid-50s, to really remember Steve Garvey as a baseball player. But that's still something. There's still some residual fame attached to him and some name ID. And the media has really kind of taken up, you know, Garvey and reporting his name. So what that does is it gives the opportunity for him to signal to Republican voters, hey, over here I am, I'm your Republican. I'm the guy to vote for. And if he's able to consolidate Republican voters around him in the primary, I mean, he very well could get into the mid 20 percentile of the vote in March, which would put him into the runoff. Remember, in California, it's a top two runoff. So it's either going to be two Democrats or a Democrat and Garvey. And that'd be interesting. I think, you know, look, it's almost impossible for a Republican to win a race like that statewide. But Garvey would be a very different type of candidate. And I think could make things more interesting than they have been for the last decade or so for Republicans.
Aside from the name recognition, when it comes to public service policy, is there any meat on the bones?
Well, that's what we're waiting to see. He hasn't answered much about specific positions on issues. Now, strategically, I don't think he needs to. I think he just has to say, hey, I'm the Republican. But he has taken an extraordinary position thus far. I've been told by a reporter that was interviewed him yesterday that he refuses to commit to vote for Donald Trump. Which, if you think about it, he's running as a Republican for the United States Senate. That is an extraordinary position to take as a candidate, and I think a courageous one. And I think that one that indicates he's interested in trying to expand beyond Republican voters in November, should he be on the ballot.
Right, because he needs California voters, and there is a sizable number of voters. I think it rivals the Republican Party, who are no party preference.
Correct. They're about the same. Now, there's some ideological splits within that population of no party preference voters, but he'll need to win two-thirds of independents and about 23% of Democrats to have a chance to actually win the seat. And to do that, yeah, he can't be someone that supports Donald Trump.
Finally, before I let you go, there was supposed to be a debate tonight, you know, for Republican candidates as well as one on Sunday. Both have been canceled due to low participation. Do debates have value anymore?
I think they do. You know, there's a lot of poo-pooing about the Republican primary debates that have taken place because Donald Trump wasn't there. But for Republican voters, they were trying to figure out who they wanted as the alternative. I think those debates were important. And Nikki Haley arguably rode great performance in those debates to where she is now, which is to be the person that has a chance to beat Trump in New Hampshire and get into a one-on-one race with him. So, yeah, I think those debates are still important.
After the primary, do you think there's going to be a debate among the two nominees? I mean, obviously, President Biden is the incumbent.
I don't think either Biden or Trump really want to debate each other. But here's something to keep an eye on.
You think the public wants to see it?
I think they'd be horrified with what they might see. And so, disclosure, I'm working with a super PAC that would support a third candidate from New Labels, should they name that ticket. I, though, think that would be a fascinating debate. If no Labels ends up with a candidate, putting them on stage with Biden and Trump is something the American people want to see, because they want to know if there's an alternative to what's being offered to them by the parties.
Rob, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Vicki.
Rob Stutzman is a Sacramento-based political strategist and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Up next, a Sacramento biotech company is using gene editing to try and create new cures for serious conditions like cancer. We'll learn about the technology's potentially life-changing implications. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.